I'm Farron Peterson. We're here at Keeneland Racetrack with Patty, also known as PJ Cooksey.
Patty Cooksey began her trailblazing career in 1979. She was only the second female in history to ride in the Kentucky Derby, the first female in history to ride in the Preakness Stakes, and at one time she was the all-time leading female jockey by number of victories. Welcome back to the Boundless Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Farron Peterson, a professional jockey and veterinarian in Lexington, Kentucky. We're here to learn from stories of resilience, risk-taking, and perseverance.
Patty, tell me, what initially drew you to horses and horse racing?
Well, Farron, it's great to be here, first of all, with you. I really appreciate you having me. But it's probably a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it quick. When I was growing up, I lived on a farm, and my dad had standardbred racehorses. And he would race mostly at the fairs in Ohio. And I loved going to the barn with them and hanging out with the horses. And, of course, I was too young to where I could, get on the horses or, get behind them. But, just kind of being around the horses with my dad growing up at that point. And then at the fairs, they would have pony races in between the standardbred races. And I got the opportunity to ride a couple pony races, which was probably pretty crazy because I really hadn't been riding that much. But we made it through and we did okay. So probably started at a young age, being around horses and then, of course, established a love affair with the horse.
Mm-hmm. It's always special when it comes from a parent. That was the same for me with my mom. Early on in your career, what was the biggest challenge you faced? And do you feel like that process changed you in a significant way for your life going forward?
Well, I started race riding back in 1979. I think the biggest challenge would have been being a woman in a male-dominated sport. It wasn't easy back then. There were a few women who came before me, which I consider the pioneers and, really the tough women that broke down all the barriers. I kind of like to say that I paved the roads and made them a lot smoother for the women behind me. But still, it wasn't easy, and it was just, competing against the men. And I was doing okay, and they were okay with me until I started winning more races and started winning and started taking their mounts. And then it kind of got pretty competitive. And, they did things on the racetrack sometimes, trying to box me in, trying to do, different things so that I wouldn't win. And, of course, it wasn't too hard to outsmart them. So we just kind of go around or do something else. And it was difficult, sometimes. But, as time went on, as long as I showed them respect, I started to earn the respect of, my male counterparts. And got a little bit easier as the years went on. So when I first came to Kentucky, of course, I was leading rider at Waterford Park where I started. My first two full meets was riding every race, and was pretty successful pretty early. And I thought, well, if there's somewhere you need to be if you're going to be a jockey, and that's Kentucky. So I packed my tack and my leading rider trophies, and I made the move, south. And I got here, and I still remained working very hard, was always here. And it was really difficult trying to get broke in. Trainers just weren't real acceptable in Kentucky with a female jockey. And so I was having a hard time. I'd get a mount here and there from somebody, but they weren't really good mounts. And so the clerk of scales was really a great guy, and I talked to him a lot. And I told him, well, maybe I'll just head back to West Virginia and go back there. And he said, no, he said, I've watched you ride. He said, you've got the talent. He said, let's try something. I said, I'll do anything. I just need some opportunities. He said, what's your middle name? And I said, why my middle name? I said, Joanne. And he said, all right, we're going to try something. So my name was Patricia on the program when I got here. And then the next program came out, and now I'm PJ Cooksey. So he used my initials. And when trainers would call in and need a rider for their horse, he would say, well, there's this new rider in town, PJ Cooksey. And they'd say, fine, put him on. So it was pretty funny when I went to the paddock the first few times, and I walk out and I put my hand out, I had hair out my helmet, and they're going, oh my God, you're a girl. I've never ridden a girl before. I said, don't worry, it's all right. I said, you'll be good. Well, what do I do? Just give me a leg up. I'll take care of the rest, you know. So it took a while to get people, but then it got me some opportunities until, of course, everybody realized that PJ Cooksey was a girl. But then they go, well, she rides pretty good, though, you know. So it kind of got my foot in the door a little bit more and got me a few more opportunities. Yes, yes. So I went by PJ Cooksey for quite a while. And then, you know, eventually I didn't, everybody knew that, you know, my gender. And so then I went back to Patricia or, you know, Patty. So, yeah.
I've had that a few times with Farron being a male or a female name. And I remember just a few years ago being in a trainer's office, and an owner was there, and we're talking back and forth, and he finally asks me my name, and he just looks shocked at me, and he goes, well, I've heard of Farron Peterson. I've just always thought you were a male. I said, well, that's fine. I have a strong finish.
Yep. And I can ride. Yeah, yeah, that's, I mean, it's just sometimes it just takes whatever it takes,
right,
to
get your foot in the door, let them see you red with an unbiased,
yes,
view.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a good word, unbiased. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something we don't
give
get
me
too
a
much.
Shot.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about, I'm just amazed that you know, there still aren't very many women riders, you know, that have really come into the sport. I don't know. I I've never been able to answer that. People would ask me, why are there not more women riders? And, you know, I just really got, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough business, and you got to be pretty tough physically and mentally. But I guess, I don't know, I guess they're just not making little girls tough anymore.
Yeah, I guess like you talk about riding the waves, which is so important to learn. And it's still not uncommon for me to be taken off a horse because of my gender. And that's just a very common reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, not something that people need to hide when they tell me why I'm being taken off a horse. So you've certainly paved the way and the people before you have, but, you know, there's still
just a lot
of biases.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that it's that's still a reason, you know, to be taken off a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And
I get it from male and female trainers.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. The female. Well, training, you know, they have to, you know, talk to the owners. A quick story that I was always told, you know, women aren't strong enough. And then I'd ask them, well, who do you ride? And they would ride like a reducing rider, a rider that spends 4 hours in the hot box to pull 6-7 pounds every day. And I would tell them, I said, well, your rider just spent 4 hours in the hot box, has to pull weight. And I said, I just sat at the lunch counter, had a BLT, a Twinkie, a glass of milk, and a big lunch. And I said, now, who do you think is going to be stronger when he walks out of that hot box? You know, and they're like, no, you kind of got a point there.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I tell them, yeah, it's not about strength so much sometimes as it is about, you know, finesse. And, yeah, I convinced a few, but, you know, I'm disappointed that it's still a gender.
And I do think about that because I listen to a lot of athlete podcasts and health, and I think the culture is starting to realize so much more on the importance of hydration and nutrition in athletes. And I think about that a lot, you know, being able to be a female and naturally lighter, what an advantage that is. So hopefully as the culture continues picking up on that, because even in other sports, I said, you know, that used to not be such a popular thing. Like no one ever thought sleep was important, and, you know, it was all a kind of the party lifestyle was fine before a big competition, and now they're starting to realize, you know, the negative ramifications of that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean athletes are athletes. I mean, there was a point early on in my career, I was 3% body fat, and I was as fit as could be. I'd sleep 4.5 hours and I'd be up and just be like, oh, you know, because you just get to a point to where you're just so fit, and it's just a great place to be. Yeah, yeah, and you work towards it. You know, you lift weights, you run, you do everything. You can do one hand pull ups. You know, you were so fit, and that's why I just you know, it's important that we eat well as an athlete. You know, and I mean, it's I think it does well. Yeah, yeah. Back in the day, I mean, that wasn't one of the requirements. I mean, riders would get in hot boxes and they'd pull weight. They'd eat. I saw a certain rider, and I'm not going to say who, back in your life, and it shocked me. We were at the lunch counter at Churchill, and he ordered a big cheeseburger, double cheeseburger with everything on it, some French fries and a Coke. And I sat down to get a little grilled cheese or something, and sitting there, and this jock wolfed this cheeseburger down, wolfed down his French fries and down two Cokes. And then he got up and we went and rode the first race. And I'm still kind of sitting there, you know, I didn't ride it. I'm still munching on my little grilled cheese sandwich. He comes back in after he rides the first race and he does it again. The chef just had that sitting there, you know, and he did it again. Well, then I didn't realize what they were doing. And, you know, wow. I mean, it was so unhealthy back then. And I think we've come so far with nutrition and diet and mental health and physical health and everything that, you know, our jockeys are so much fitter and healthier than back in the day.
Yeah. Right, because it is so important. Our bodies need to last us for the long haul.
Long haul.
Uh-huh. We have Perry Utes out there still riding at 70.
Still riding. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He took care of his body.
His heart. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have to. Yeah. And that's what's so great about our sport. Yeah. You can, you can still do it into your better years. I would have, if I had to broke both legs, I probably would still be riding. I'd probably be in Perry Utes too.
You would. You'd be beating me out there.
I'd still be out there. Let's go, youngin'.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Great sport. Greatest game played outdoors, right?
It is. Yeah. Were you often the only female in your races, or were there other female jockeys at the tracks where you were riding?
It depended on where I was racing. You know, the smaller tracks, I think at the Latonia back in the 80s, we sometimes had a room full of women riders, 6, 7, 8, you know, in the room at a time. We had quite a few. You know, a lot of the girls would come in and ride one race or something. But back then I rode, you know, pretty much the card every day and, you know, got a lot of opportunities, you know, to race a lot. But, you know, when I came to Churchill Downs, of course, when I arrived at Churchill Downs to ride my first race, they didn't even have a female jockey's quarters. So I asked one of the guards as I walked in and I said, where's the female jock's room? And he says, oh, ma'am, I've been here for, I don't know, 25 years. And I don't think they have a female jockey's quarters. So I said, well, show me where the men's room is. So I went to the men's room and talked to the clerk of scales. And it was pretty funny where they were scrambling, trying to find somewhere for me to change into my jock's clothes. So the first year I arrived at Churchill Downs, I changed in the nurse's station downstairs at the bottom of the escalator. And then the following year, they built probably one of the best women's jockey's quarters, you know, in the world for me. And usually Churchill and Keeneland, you know, I was kind of the only one for quite a bit.
I rode at Belmont about 4 years ago, and I think it took an hour for them to find the key to the girls' jocks room. And then everything was covered in dust, and it felt good to break it in. And now I see there's been a few female riders who are doing well out there, so it is being used.
You think that we've come a long way, but sometimes actually we haven't. You know, it's just, you know, it's a tough sport, I think, sometimes. And I mean, you know, some women, you know, want the glamour, want to come out and think it's glamorous, and then they realize that it's a lot tougher than they thought, and it's physically tough, and I think mentally also a lot of people don't realize.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have seen that picture. It's still hanging at Turfway, formerly called Latonia, and it's in the girls' jocks room, and it's in black and white, and the female colony looked large, and I was surprised to see that, but it is inspiring to us now.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we did have quite a few. And like I said, the smaller tracks, you had more women riders, and you know, I think we held our own. You know, a lot of times we'd get excited, we'd win the double, or the girls would win 4 out of 10 races one night, you know. So it got pretty good there for a while, and but like I said, it's just, you know, we just don't have as many riders as you would think in this day and age.
Yeah. Speaking of inspiration, I know you've inspired many jockeys, particularly female riders. Was there anyone early on in your career who inspired you?
You know, I watched a lot of the riders. I think probably one who really was instrumental in my career was Pat Day. And in so much that it's not like he took me under his wing or anything, but I could always go to Pat Day and ask him something and get an honest answer. And then watching Pat's demeanor, I mean, if he just got beat in a $250,000 stakes race by a nose, you'd never know it, because he always stayed on the same plane, the same keel. And it was just so hard for me to humbly lose. I was a poor loser. I didn't like losing. I just, you know, it took me a long time to realize that I'm not going to win every race. And so Pat, you know, Pat was a good influence on me, where you just learn to keep that same demeanor, you know, whether you win or lose, and just, you know, just keep showing up.
Obviously, horses ran for you. What is unique about your approach to horses and riding that set you apart from other riders?
I'd like to say I had good hands. I had really good hands. I was, I could really communicate well with the horse. And I think a lot of my passion and compassion for the horse and respect for the horse, I think the horses felt that and they knew that. And, you know, I was kind to them and I asked them to run for me and not so much, you know, used a lot of, you know, stick and everything. But you know, I had good hands and was patient in a race. You know, you had to just kind of wait to make your move and wait for your horse to give you that cue, and just the communication, you know, with the horse and everything.
Yeah, makes it so much more gratifying, I think. I've done individual sports in the past, and there's nothing quite as special as winning a race with a horse.
Exactly, yeah, and becoming one, you know, I mean, and I'm sure you felt it. Sometimes you just become one with the horse, and it, you're just the only two out there, you and the horse, and nothing else matters around you, and you make all the right moves, the horse responds to what you ask them to do, and then it results in a win, and that's very gratifying.
Yeah, nothing more rewarding.
Yeah.
Can you describe a horse you rode that initially was tricky to figure out?
Not really any in particular horse, I guess. I mean, each horse you had to kind of figure out. You had to kind of learn their quirks and see what they liked or didn't like. I really enjoyed picking horses up, like in the afternoon, like a rider takes off or, you know, can't fulfill their riding engagements. And then I would pick the horse up, and that would be the first time I meet the horse. You know, they leg me up in the paddock, and then I'd have 3 or 4 minutes in the post parade to get to know the horse a little bit and know how he likes to bit in his mouth, you know, whether he's got a hard mouth, soft mouth, you know, whether he likes, you know, the kindness, the compassion that I show them. All every time I got a leg up, I'd pet the horse on the neck and just, you know, let him know that we're a team. And so yeah, we just, you know, just again, the communication and, you know, being one.
Yeah. Well, do you have a horse that was most meaningful to your career?
I think all the horses were meaningful to my career. It didn't matter. You know, I'd ride anything. You know, if I saw a horse flipping the gate with a jock, I'd go to the barn and I'd say, I'll ride that horse back, you know, because I see the jock sitting there fidgeting and making the horse nervous, jock's nervous, you know, and I knew that I could get in the gate and I could keep the horse calm. And, you know, I just had confidence in myself that I could do a better job. And, you know, so I think that gave me a lot of opportunities where I would pretty much ride anything. But it's, you know, each horse is its own individual, and each horse has its own personality. And that was, you know, what you tried to connect with. Some horses I didn't get along with, and I'd give them 2 or 3 tries. And if I knew that they weren't giving me everything, I would tell the trainer that they need to change riders. Or a horse that needed a lot of whip, I'd give him a couple tries, and if he didn't respond, you know, with a little bit of whip or whatever, then I would tell the trainer he needs a bigger, stronger boy rider.
There you go. Well, I admire your integrity, and I try to do the same. I think, well, we owe it to the horse and the connections that they get their best ride, and not every animal responds to us. They have their people that they like for whatever reason. So
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And to be honest with the trainers, I mean, you know, a lot of them respected that. You know, I'm not getting the run out of him that I think he has, and I think you need to try somebody else. And, you know, I think they respected that. Sometimes, you know, I don't know, you know, some of them just really still wanted to ride you anyway. You know, I go, all right, but, you know, I'll try something different. Yeah, and try again, try something different. So, yeah.
What was the most sacrificial part of your career?
I really don't think I sacrificed a whole lot. You know, I was first one there in the mornings, last one to leave. I'd galloped 10, 15 horses in the morning and loved every minute of it. I've always said that I've never worked a day in my life, you know, because when you love what you're doing, it's not work. And I could get on enough horses in the morning and then, you know, go take a nap, have a big BLT sandwich, some Twinkies, a big glass of milk, take a little nap, and then get ready for the 10-race card and ride 10 races straight. So I don't think it was any sacrifice, as far as, you know, loving what you do, until my daughter was born, of course. When she was born, then it was a little more of a sacrifice. But I think I was blessed with my mom, you know, took care of her and watched her while I can continue my career. And, that really worked well for us and worked well for her.
Yeah. Well, I like that routine, the BLT, milk, a nap. I do like a pre-race nap. Did you have anything that you used as a pre-race routine to get into the zone and be race ready, especially when you're riding a 10-race card?
Well, before that, I like to get in a little earlier in the jocks room where I can get kind of settled in, look at the form a little bit, the program, look at my horses type thing. And then before I went out for the first race, I would find a back room or a corner somewhere and I would pray. And I wouldn't pray to win. I would just pray for safety for me, for my horse, and for all the jockeys, you know, in the race, because as you know, one bad step or, you know, anything can happen and you could go down in a spill and be paralyzed, even killed, you know, and that's just part of it, part of the game, but you try not to dwell on it. And so I would pray. That was my pre-race readiness.
That's the main part of my pre-race routine as well. And I think it just gives you that foundation, because we often can't control the outcomes and we might be on the best horse that day and get cut off in the race. But I think it really helps me stay grounded and just in the post-parade to know his will be done.
And knowing that you've got someone taking care of you and watching over you and, like I said, all the other riders. And, you know, there was I'm going to share a race with you that really set that in stone. Is I was heading head for the lead. It was at Latonia, and my horse went down, and as soon as he went down, everything kind of went into slow motion. You know, of course, when a horse falls, they fall quick, but when he did, for some reason, everything went into slow motion, and I had the whole field behind me. And I remember, as I'm rolling and tumbling, I could see horses going over my head and see the girths, but I felt like I had a bubble over me. And everything, like I said, just went into slow motion, and I've got this bubble protecting me, and I'm still rolling, and horses are jumping and going over me. And it was just the most amazing thing that I had ever experienced. And once we all came to a stop and all the horses had gotten by and everything, I just laid there and just, you know, you kind of check your body and make sure everything's all right. And I was just like, thank you, Lord. I mean, I just felt like he just protected me and watched over me and was always very gracious about, you know, his protection and love over our industry and our racing.
Yeah, you would certainly feel humbled walking away from that. Mm-hmm. And knowing all the riders behind you were safe, too. Wow, that is amazing. What was the highlight of your career that you still look back on fondly?
So many, not really one you can really pick out, you know, just winning races and being the first to the finish line, you know, outriding the rider beside you or getting more out of a horse that shouldn't have been type thing. But I think one of the things I think I'm most proud of is getting the Mike Benizia Memorial Award, which is probably the second best award for a jockey beneath the George Wolfe Award. It's for a jockey who shows sportsmanship and horsemanship, you know, in racing. And I'm pretty sure I'm still the only female jockey that ever received that award. And I've got a really nice bronze statue, you know, on my shelf. And, you know, I'm really proud of that, because I always tried to be, you know, have integrity and you know, I always try to treat everybody right and, you know, and just show the horsemanship and, you know, compassion for the horses. So I think that's probably, you know, one of the most things I'm proud of is that trophy.
That's great. I didn't know about that award, but I've just heard about you for years, and your writing ability and your character is something that I just hear a lot of people discussing now. So you've definitely left that legacy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's nice to know that, you know, that what I did was right most of the times. I'm sure there's some people saying some things. They're like, nah, but yeah, I mean, you just try to always treat everybody right. And, you know, the grooms, I'd give them a few dollars if they took care of a horse that I won with. I know one thing, I could have opened up a donut shop, because every time I'd win a race, I'd take a dozen donuts or two dozen donuts to the barn. You know, and if I had a good day and win three or four races, it cost me a lot of money for those donuts, but they were so appreciative of it. You know, they really enjoyed, you know, having some donuts, and, you know, and then they always, you know, if they hear a trainer saying who they're going to put on, my name will be thrown up first, you know. So that was pretty neat to be able to, always treat others well.
I agree. And I think there's something so fulfilling about making it more of a team aspect and thanking the people who are behind the scenes, because we're there early and we see who's putting the work in, and they often don't get to be the ones with their names on the tote board or in the winner's circle. So I think it's really important to keep showing appreciation to them.
It is a team, and they put in, it's 7 days a week. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you talk about sacrifice. Yeah, it's 7 days a week that you go out and you work and you train and you help the trainer get horses out. And, you know, these guys are there taking care of their animals, and it's just, it's the small things, I think, that mean a lot.
Yeah. And I know you were the second female in history to ride in the Kentucky Derby. Can you describe a bit what that experience was like?
Wow, that was pretty neat. You know, of course, it was still early on. It was, 1984, and a little horse that we'd shipped out to California to race in the Hollywood Preview Stakes called So Vague, and as a two-year-old. And we took him out there and raced him in for the Hollywood Preview Stakes. And it was pretty exciting. There was, there was Willie Shoemaker and Chris McCarron and Jacinto Vasquez, Georgie Velasquez. It was all the top name riders, you know, of that generation. And it was 14-horse field. And I remember coming through the lane and just weaving in and out of horses. You know, a little colt just picked up the bit and took off with me. So finally, I just made a right-hand turn and went to the outside. And, you know, we came to the wire, and there was probably about six or seven horses inside of me. And we just nipped them at the wire. And I remember Chris McCarron looking over, and in the picture, you can even see him looking at me. And I look over at him, and I won't say what he said. But I beat them all on the wire, and that was just so exciting. And then, and it's just hanging out with those riders after the race, congratulating me and everything. And well, then eventually that horse winning that race, the owners, he was owned by an Australian syndicate, and they put him in the Kentucky Derby. The whole week, you know, Derby week previous was just a blur, you know, interviews and talking to everybody, being, you know, like I said, the second female. And, we had a lot of fun with it leading up to that. And come race day, I talked to Don Brumfield. And I said, Don, which, you know, he was the king of Churchill and Kentucky racing before Pat came around. I said, what can you tell me about, you know, riding the Derby? And he's just old Southern boy. He says, well, he said, when you get to the wall down the stretch, he says, keep riding. He said, your horse will know. He said, you'll know, and you keep riding. So you think as an athlete, the wall being, you know, like you get tired and you need to, you know, kind of keep pushing through. But actually, during the race, it was coming down the lane for the first time. You could hear the crowd. It was, you know, exciting and everything. But, you know, of course, you're concentrating on the race and putting your horse in a good position and everything. And then up the backside, my horse started to make a little bit of a move. And then around the turn, up top of the turn, before we got to the home stretch, of course, all the speed horses were backing up and all the late runners were making their move. So it became a bottleneck, you know, with a bunch of horses like right there. And I remember a hole kind of opened up and my horse was still moving up underneath me. And there was a rider right next to me. I remember we looked at each other. And we both looked and went for the same hole. And luckily, I beat him to it, and he had to pull up and pull his horse back. So I get through the hole, and then as we turn for home, down the stretch. You know, my horse is up. He's running underneath me. I'm not going to win the Kentucky Derby, but I'm going to try to pick up as many horses as I can and, you know, finish as close as I could. And then all of a sudden, my horse's head went up and his ears pricked. And I felt this pressure, like, against me. And it was like, oh, my gosh. It felt like that's the wall. You know, my horse kind of hesitated, and I, you know, got after him a little bit, and I put our head down and started riding again. And it was like a sound barrier. The people in the audience screaming so loud that you hit this, like, sound barrier. And the horse felt it, and I felt like a lift. And then, you know, we were like, we're still in the race, keep going. So we finished up. Yeah, and that was just the most amazing thing. And then I realized what Don had meant by the wall. You just hit this wall sound barrier of just the crowd. It was so loud. It was just an amazing experience, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
What advice would you give to someone starting out in their career that you wish someone had told you early on in yours?
I think I would have really liked to have had the advice that it's not going to be easy. You're going to have some really hard times, and you're going to have some really good times. And you just have to ride. You have to ride the waves. You're going to be on top. One meet, I was leading rider. And the next meet, I come to Keelan Churchill, and I ride one horse. So you had to ride the ups and downs of the industry. And it was fun to be on top, and it was, like, really hard to be, you know, struggling to get mounts and trying to make a living. So mainly just trying to keep that even keel type thing and you know, try not to get too high or too low.
Right. I like that. And what do you enjoy about your role in horse racing now, and what is it that you're doing?
So now I retired race riding in 2004, and I started with the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, which is the regulatory body of all of horse racing in Kentucky. So they make all the rules. They, you know, the stewards, the standard bred judges, they all work with the racing commission. And I started as deputy director, and I was director of public relations and liaison between the horsemen and the racing commission. And what I realized is it was different being regulated than being the regulator. Because when you'd come before the stewards, you know, we saw it a different way out there on the racetrack than they see it. But you have to realize that they see it differently on TV or, you know, through the camera's lens than we see it out there actually between the horse's ears. And, you know, and that was just hard. It was good that I was able to know both sides of it, you know. And so I've had more than many hats, and currently I am a Racing Officials Accreditation Program certified racing steward and a racing judge. I judge harness racing. But my main job at the commission is with the Kentucky Breeders Incentive Fund. So you breed your mare to a Kentucky Registered Stallion. The mare has to rein a stay from the time she's bred to the time she foals. And I go around the state to all the farms, and I check and make sure the mares are in the state and where they're supposed to be. So I've had the best jobs.
Yeah, you get to go visit the farms, see the mares. Oh, that's great.
Well, and again, I've never worked a day in my life. Wouldn't enjoy what you do, and you know, working with the racing commission and learn the other side of it. It's you know, it's really interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
And I'm sure it's helpful that you're able to bring your insight and experience to what you're doing now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the first things I wanted to change when I got to the racing commission was the whips, because they were so brutal. And, you know, and that's, of course, that's changed. And I don't think it was all me, but, you know, that was one of the things I wanted to change in Kentucky. And also helmets. I did a lot of, you know, I worked with a lot of people in getting better helmets for jockeys. And of course, now, you know, they have the better helmets and always wearing vests. So, you know, I think we've done some good.
It's pretty wild to think jockeys used to not wear helmets and then they didn't wear vests.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I was riding when they started to make us wear vests. And I was one of the ones that fought it, too. I mean, it was just, they were cumbersome, you know, and it just didn't feel right, you know, and it was just really hard to make that change. But, you know, then eventually they said, you either wear the vest or you don't ride. It was that simple. So we got used to these big bulky vests. Then eventually, you know, they technology was, you know, was better, and they got them thinner and, you know, still, you know, real protective and everything. And then, now you wouldn't leave the jockstrom without your vest or, you know, or the bigger helmets. You know, the old Caliente helmets were just, it's just fiberglass with some padding in it. And I don't know how many times I've landed on my head with just a Caliente on. And, you know, luckily I survived.
It still seems sharp today.
Yeah. And, well, thank God. But, you know, the helmets today are so much better, and the technology with the helmets the jockeys are wearing. And I know we fought a little bit about, well, they did, I didn't, you know, about wearing the bigger helmets, you know, and a lot of the jocks would complain, well, it looks like a bucket on my head. Well, so what? It'll protect your head, you knucklehead. So, yeah, so getting that, you know, getting those things, those changes pushed through, you know, was a challenge, but it was all for the better and all for the good of, you know, the safety of, you know, the riders and, you know, horses and everything.
Mm-hmm. How neat to be a part of history and see all those changes. And it's benefiting me and my riders that I ride next to now. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What would you say horse racing has taught you about yourself?
Oh, that's a good one. I think, you know, it teaches you a lot of patience. Teaches you that work isn't so hard. You know, that working gets you places. Working hard gets you places. Patience, compassion. You know, I love the industry, not only for the horses, but the people. I mean, the people are so great. Of course, you know, like every industry and probably every company, you know, has your I like to call them knuckleheads. But for the most part, you know, we're a wonderful industry, a wonderful community. And we help each other. We support each other. Even though we're competing against each other out there on the track, we come back to the jocks room and we're still family, mostly. you know, so that's, it's just... Yeah, you just learn to give and take and just learn to get along with everybody.
I do love seeing the opportunities and number of jobs that horse racing provides for people, or seeing a groom that ends up grooming a horse who becomes a graded stakes winner and gets to travel around the country or to a new country with it. I just think horses have taken me places, and it's neat to see how many lives they've touched in that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree. I consider the grooms... you know, the unsung heroes. You know, they're the ones that are with the horse day in and day out, and yeah, they're unsung heroes, and it does take, it's a team effort, you know, from the groom, the trainer, you know, the jockey, the owner, and you know, and it's just when you put it all together and you get into the winner's circle, it's so very gratifying.
It is. And what are a couple of things that currently bring you joy in your life?
Well, the biggest thing right now is my new grandson. I have a grandson, and I'm a grandma, his name's Abel, and he's 4.5 months old, and I get to spend, you know, a whole day with him, about one day a week right now, and he's just a joy. He's just a happy baby. He's smiling. I'm so proud of my daughter, you know, being such a good mom and getting through the hard part and, you know, the sleepless nights type thing. And, she's got a wonderful husband, Philip, that, just really is family oriented, and, his family's wonderful. So I just really blessed with, you know, with family and my grandson, and still loving what I do. I still enjoy working, if you want to call it work.
Right. That's how I feel too. And that's why I'm so glad that even when we have to stop riding, that there's just so many different avenues that horses and horse racing can take us.
They do. And the horse industry in Kentucky especially is really been the pinnacle, I think, of the industry. And even years before I ever came around, and I think it'll be that way, you know, years after, you know, I'm long gone. And it's just a class, historical, you know, wonderful industry.
Yeah, it is. It's just inspiring to be here in Kentucky. I lived here 3 years ago, and this is where I want to stay.
I moved here 30-some years ago and never left. So it's a good place to live. Yeah. Still love the people. And like I said, as long as we're in this industry, it's a great place to live.
Yeah. Well, Patty, thank you for taking the time. I've admired your career for a while and heard great things about you and always heard you were a strong writer. So it means a lot to hear your story and the ups and downs and just how you made it work and how much joy that your passion and following that has meant to you. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Farron. And you are the next generation of not only writers, but of, you know, our industry leaders. So, you know, I wish you the best of luck in everything that you endeavor to do in this industry. And I know you'll go far.
Thank you.
And now for a moment from our next episode with Perry Utz, airing February 13th, 2025.
I still get that same thrill even after 50-something years. Every time I cross the finish line, I get that same thrill.
So Perry is currently 70 years old. He's ridden in 53,419 races and won 7,487 of them. And he's not finished yet.
Boundless is a podcast that explores the stories of individuals who have accomplished the seemingly impossible by breaking molds and redefining success through unique challenges, pivotal moments, and unbreakable determination.